Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Have you calmed down yet, listener? Because I don't know if I have. It's the 5-Year Plan Podcast, episode 513, and it's panic stations. As it's raining, it's pouring, it's horrible, listener. I'm Joe Walker, I'll be your host today, and with me, it's Ben Long, who I saw at the Amex. How are you, sir? Are you feeling any better?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. I saw you before the game, so we were all good then.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what time it was when you left the stadium, but I didn't see it on the way out, so...
It's the earliest I've left a Palace game, possibly same. Ever, I think.
Yep, same.
Pretty bad. But that's a sign of where we are right now. And completing today's trio, the James Tompkins to my Mamadou Sakho, it's Jack Pearce, who I also saw at the Amex in a rare meeting face-to-face.
It's probably the highlight of my day, Joe, to be honest. It wasn't good. I fell foul of wanting to leave just after they locked the gates. So, yeah, I saw James Tompkins doing his warm down, which, given that he didn't do much that afternoon to get warmed up, I don't really know what the warm down's for. But my, what an afternoon on the South Coast that was.
Yeah.
And it's got worse since.
It really has. This could be very long. So I'm going to try and get through it as quickly as possible. Before we do, though, word as always from our sponsor at the top of the show, Green King Sport, packed football schedule, Premier League action, FA Cup, and then the tail end of the AFCON as well. So make sure you go to a Green King Sport pub to watch every game in the atmosphere it deserves down at your local. And remember, of course, if you download the Green King Sport app, you'll also receive 10% off drinks whenever there's a game on the telly. And that includes some low and no alcohol options too. So if you're keeping your dry Jan and keeping it into February, which if you're a Palace fan right now, I don't know how you're doing that, but it won't affect your sporting experience in a Green King Sport pub. Right, where were we? Palace 4-1 defeat at Brighton. A new low in recent weeks and certainly this season. It's funny, I spoke about seeing you both before the game. Jack, we have that conversation. And it was almost like a tonic because the rest of the time was just informing people because signal was a bit choppy in the away end. I found like I was telling everybody I saw, oh, Elise's on the bench and Ezzy's not starting. And you just saw people deflate before kickoff had even began. Was our fate already sealed at kickoff, do you think?
Yeah, I got on a train from Lewis to Falmer at 1:45, and I don't know why I did, because I just got whisper then that Elise was on the bench and Ezzy hadn't even travelled. I thought Roy had played a blinder on Friday in kind of smoke and mirroring it. Giving us the impression there were doubts. I think we were all quite relaxed about Michael Olise, especially after Tuesday night. Well, that was a kind of self-preservation substitution. More worried about Ebbs, but again, Roy indicated that he was going to be left until the day to make a decision. So I think there was a sense that Ebbs might not make it. But to see Michael Olise on the bench, it just rams home the reliance upon two players. And we'll come on to the news about Olise and everything that relates to Michael Olise on Saturday afternoon. But yeah, the die was cast before ball was kicked. And that was about as mellow a Brighton away end that I've been in. I've been there 5 or 6 times now. And that was about as mellow as it gets in terms of that fixture. The lack of expectation from the Palace away end, as I said, before a ball was kicked, says it all really. And then the game started, and it just got worse and worse and worse and has got worse since. So, yeah, this is a pretty dire place for a Palace fan to be. I've often tried to to maintain a degree of balance, even if my instinct is to go a bit wild. But I'm having difficulty this week drawing myself back in, to be honest. I am livid.
Yeah, I totally understand. And Longy, I would also throw you in relatively speaking, quite a positive Palace fan. You find the positives where you can. We concede again within the first 4 or 5 minutes. I think it's the third time in 4 games that we've done so. That on its own is quite frustrating. For it to be another corner conceded away from home, that's our third in 2 away games. And I don't count our corner that we then conceded from in our Arsenal game as well, which you could arguably throw as like bad set-piece defending. If the die wasn't cast at kickoff, was it not then 2 minutes later anyway? We'd give ourselves no chance at all to even play a risk-averse Royal Star performance here. Like, how long before you're ready for, oh my God, is this really happening?
Yeah, well, this is the problem, and this was the problem at Arsenal. When we haven't got our attacking threats in the team, so we have to stay in games as long as we can. And we talked about this last time I was on after the Man City game, which is ultimately how we got that result, because we stayed in the game as long as we could. Now, at the Emirates and at the weekend, we've gone up against two teams that are Arsenal certainly better than us. And at this moment, Brighton are better than us, and we've got to admit that. And we're just chucking it in straight away, not letting in. Instead of being cut apart by a good team, we're chucking in, letting them score soft corners. And after 3 minutes, and it had to be him who scored as well.
Mm.
Like you say, everyone was probably reeling from the team news anyway, because we know we don't possess any threat going forward really without them two boys, and they weren't going to be there. And then, yeah, 3 minutes in, we give up a corner, and it's like any game plan we had has gone out the window. I thought we did sort of creep into the game a little bit, but then ultimately after that, them two goals in the 2 minutes killed us, and then it just became an absolute farce from that moment. So
yeah, you had a couple of bad moments already with the kickoff announcement, the first goal, Jack, that 5-10 minutes or so of Mark Gay limping off, Wharton comes on, which I think most people would have been positive about. It moves, Chris Richards naturally moves back to centre half, so it all kind of thinks, okay, we can manage that, and Wharton can make his impact on the game, and we then can see 2 goals in 2 minutes. Wharton involved, quite losing the ball from the kickoff in the second of those, and that's game over. We're sort of half hour or so into the game. Yeah, at that point there is. Are you on the same thinking of Roy, where you think, okay, there's something still to be gained. We've got enough time in this game to call something back, or is that just that's game over there and then?
At 3-0.
Yeah,
I'd have packed up. I'd have decided, and we'll come on to Michael Olise, but I'd have put him on a train home already at that point. I'd have said, don't bother, wrap yourself up. The game's gone. I mean, I wonder about Mark Gay, whether he got injured before. He got spun twice, didn't he, in quite quick succession. It's something you see so rarely. I wonder whether he turned out to be his knee before the first time he got spun, because you just don't see Mark Gay get spun like that. And he got spun by Buonanotte, and it might be Buonanotte again the second time. And the second time is when he went down for the first time and he tried to stay on and he couldn't. I actually felt the sub was right. The alternative was James Tompkins coming on. The last time I saw James Tompkins at the Amex was when Andone burnt him with a 30-yard head start. And
yeah.
I mean, let's focus on this terrible time at the Amex rather than backtrack. But the alternative was James Tompkins. So Wharton coming on was the right sub. But even with him coming on, you see him trot on and you're thinking, my word, what a baptism of fire. Like, this is going to be tough for you. You're sitting at the base of the midfield, which we've heard is not his best position. He's best with somebody next to him. And straight away, he slotted in there. He didn't put Lerma there. He put Wharton there. And it told pretty quickly that Wharton will need some time to settle. I thought he showed some nice touches, and I'm sure we'll touch on him throughout the pod. But the succession of goals, the speed at which they came, it just ended it all. It just ended it all. And very quickly, the banners start to come out. And I've got my opinions about banners coming out so quickly when you lose a game of football. It's not for me. I'll be perfectly honest. I don't think every time we lose a football match, we need the banners to come out. But elements of the fan base clearly think that's how they're going to get heard and think that that's having some impact. But it's not for me. But you see that happen so quickly. To be honest, the last 15 minutes of the first half, I can't really clearly remember it, to be honest. And I'd only had 2 pints, one of which courtesy of your dad, Joe, and please thank him for that one. But all in all, it's at the point now where I'm not even really watching the game of football. I'm stood there in the away and just thinking about the broader picture, just thinking about the ownership, just thinking about the situation with Royce, thinking about, are we going to survive this season? I'm not even watching the game of football in front of me. And I went downstairs at halftime and had a chat with some Palace fans, met Dave, and had a nice chat. And again, that was a highlight of the day, to be honest. But it's now getting to the point where going to Palace isn't even just about the 90 minutes of football you're watching. It seems so much more than that. And that's not really what I enjoy. I enjoy going to watch a game of football with my mates and having a good time. And it's not very enjoyable at the moment. And that last 15 minutes of the second half, I did some deep thinking. And it was a peculiar one. And then the second half started and that took me into a whole other level. But yeah, we'll get into that, I'm sure, in a moment.
Yeah, there was a fear we even discussed on here that, oh, there's a potential that Roy gets time enough to go to the Amex, gets hammered, and then that gets his marching orders. You know, actually, you know, I should say to listeners, just in case you don't know, like the Arsenal pod, we're recording on Tuesday evening almost to accommodate a potential announcement from the club, because it just feels that we're kind of getting untenable with the way the away end is and how toxic it gets. We haven't even talked about beyond half-time yet, but I should say at the time of recording, sort of 7:15 on Tuesday, there has no announcement has materialised. Roy is currently looking like he's going to fight for at least another day. And there's been some reports about sounding out candidates, trying to get interest but struggling. We'll get back to that on the other side of this, because I feel like, Longy, disaster is striking. Midway through the first half, Brighton are singing about how crap we are. We're singing along. It's just like a total, what I would say, like, this is the lowest of the low. I'm really not enjoying this. And yet we find a way to just take it a step worse with what ends up being the biggest controversy of the game. You know, we go, like, Mateta scores a quite a nice goal and we lose the game 4-1 in the end. But it's before that, it's Michael Olise coming on at half-time, and with his first sort of attempted sprint on the counter, pulls up immediately, flags off. We are now hearing reports that it's going to be at least 2 months that he's injured for. What's your perspective on how that played out?
So, like you say, I try and look for the positive in everything. And it was, from the moment I found out the team news, like, I did think that maybe there was a chance that Eze was going to play and Roy was being a bit coy. But when I found out he wasn't in the squad at all and Michael was on the bench, from that, it was just a down spiral from there, almost into a blur. So first half, we let him score after a couple of minutes, right in front of us, giving him the opportunity to give it to us, which was like, this is just another step in the wrong direction. And then the 2 goals in the 2 minutes. The slight positive, I was actually quite surprised that Roy brought Adam Wharton on. And I thought, oh, that's something to get hold of there. He's actually made, because I was expecting James Tonkins. As soon as I saw Mark go down, I thought, I was expecting Tonks to be coming on. So that was a positive. But then they scored the two quick goals in succession, which sort of dampened that. Then I'm turning around, I'm seeing the usual suspects with their flags, trying to get some exposure, and like they do all the time, and they have done for quite a few games now. People that were opposing that were trying to tell them to put them down. Then they're starting some pushing and shoving together. And for me, that was a moment then when I was done with the day, and I was like, I tweeted about it later on that night. I've got to the point where I am not enjoying going to Palace games anymore, and I've been going to Palace a long time. Because gone are the days of people being allowed to have an opinion and people respecting your opinion. You might not agree with it, but you respect it. But now you're not allowed to have the opinion that Steve Parrish is the right guy to be running the club now. If you say that, you get shouted down and you get people offering you out and stuff. Like, it's come to a point now where that moment when the people were pushing and shoving each other, and I thought, this is done. And I'm sat there with my pals, a bit like Jack, the last 15 minutes of that half, absolute blur. I can't even remember what happened. I think Schlappi had a couple of shots, maybe. But, I mean, we'll go on to people getting scapegoated. I mean, Schlappi's been one of the scapegoats for a long time now. I thought Saturday wasn't as bad as he has been lately. Geezer in front of me, shouting out so that Dean Henderson could hear him, telling him he's shit. He hadn't actually done anything wrong at that moment in time. Again, he's another one of the scapegoats that's been classically blamed for everything at a minute, even though he hasn't really done anything wrong. People forgetting Sam Johnson was in a bad run of form before he got injured, and cost us a few goals before he injured, but because he's not playing, as is the adage, the players that ain't playing are the best players. And yeah, I saw Michael Olise warming up at half-time. I turned around to the boy, as I said, this bloke does not need to touch his pitch today. Wrap him up, get him showered, change, get his tracksuit back on, do not bring him on. And lo and behold, what happened. And for me, that was my head was gone. I could have probably dealt with, after a couple of weeks chilling out, losing down there. We've been there before. We got thrashed. The promotion season, we got thrashed down there. So I can handle that. But when he brought Olise on, and after 10 minutes, he's done the sprint, he's gone. For me, my head was gone, and I was like, "Roy, that is a sackable offence in itself." And I stick with most managers to the very end. Stuck with Pars to the end. Stuck with all of them to the end, to be honest. But that was me done with Roy on Saturday when he brought on Olise. He's been sucking the life out of me anyway with his decisions and his constant hammering people that he shouldn't do, I shouldn't do, but I do put it down to age, because the older you get, you don't stop and think about what you're about to say. You just let it come out. I don't want to blame his age, but that he's been getting away with a lot in my mind, and I've let him go away with a lot. But that for me was game over, and I was like, the mate, he has to go now. He is making decisions. Like, I'm not saying he's gone mental and lost his marbles, but that's not the same decision. Bring in Michael Olise on. He's got a hamstring injury. He knows he has. Whether he's been told he can have 45 minutes, Michael's always going to say, I'm ready, just like Wilf did. But as a manager, you've got responsibility to that player and also the club now, because he's risked Michael, and potentially we're going to lose him for up to 2 months. But yeah, I've gone on a little bit too long there, mate, but that was the moment. It wasn't really the first half performance as we were 3-0 down or whatever. It was the Michael Olise situation, which for me, it was like, nah, he's got to go now. I am done.
I think that was the breaking point for a lot of people. I've backed Roy so much on this pod. I've almost sort of provocatively said I'm a car-carrying Roy apologist, because, like you said, I think if you have that opinion, it's a bit frowned upon. He lost me there. That was kind of the short. Is it, Jack? Is it simply the act of a desperate man knowing that his fate might be sealed, or he needs to pull something out of the bag? Because logically, given how much we've missed him this season, that's a man that really knows how much he needs to be looked after, and actually, God forbid, the prospects of what we'd have to get on without him for the next couple of weeks. So is it just pure? Is that a man that actually knows his job is on the line, in a way that he perhaps doesn't show in press conferences?
I mean, I'll make it 3 for 3. He lost me with that, and the news that came out last night from Sammy Motbell's compounded it, really. But I defended Roy after the Brentford game. I thought it was absolute nonsense that he was getting grief for keeping Michael Olise on a game in which he needed to keep Michael Olise on. I think underneath all of this, there's clearly an issue with Michael Olise's hamstring. That's clearly an issue that has not been addressed throughout this season since he suffered that injury with France in the summer. But ignoring that, while I defended Roy to the hill regarding the Brentford decision, I felt the criticism he received about that was ridiculous and over the top and was completely misplaced. Saturday was negligent. It was a act of a desperate man, a desperate coaching staff, a desperate football club. And it shines a bad light on everybody that decision could have been influenced by. If the medical staff don't feel they could strongly enough oppose Roy's decision there, then something's wrong. If the coach, not to name check him individually, but if Paddy McCarthy, his first team coach or assistant manager, whatever the role he is, can't put his arm on Roy and say, Roy, it's not the right decision. If Ray Lewington, a man who has worked with Roy for nearly 15 years since Fulham in 2007, or longer than that, longer than 15 years, can't say to somebody I'm sure they consider friends, Roy, you've got this one wrong, we need to go back and change the sub, then it all just highlights how chaotic it is. And I've always felt throughout all the different reigns of management, and Longy just mentioned about the end, the last day of Pardew, which surely will be a film at some point. But during that period, I always felt the carnage that was going on within the fan base wouldn't be replicated within the club. I always felt the football club must be more professional than this. The arrangement within the coaching staff, the arrangement within the fitness staff, the medical staff, it's not going to be as chaotic as this. That decision demonstrated to me that actually the chaos that we're experiencing as fans in the away end, at home matches, on social media, on websites, wherever, is actually probably pretty close to the chaos that seems to be within the club at the moment. If decisions like that are being made, where your most valuable player in terms of money and as well as impact upon the season, I know a lot of people compare or combine Ebbs and Michael Olise to be as one threat. I actually think Michael Olise has been playing at a level above Ebbs this season. I think Michael Olise is considerably our best player. To jeopardise his fitness and in doing so the rest of our season and our Premier League status, I can't see any way that Roy survives that. As of 72 hours after the game, he has survived up to this point. Whether that's the case by the time we play Chelsea on Monday, we'll see. I always think if you're going to make a decision about a manager's future, you have to leave the next manager with as much time before their first game. Well, we're not doing that, which indicates that Roy somehow might still be in the dugout come Monday. For his sake, for the club's sake, I think Roy has to go now. And that's not easy to say, because I actually am very uncomfortable with the way this has turned out and played out for Roy Hodgson. And I just look back at last May and think, my God, what a perfect opportunity for that man to get the send-off that he justifiably deserves. And here we are with some of the references or some of the phrases that were being held in his direction on Saturday blew my mind, to be honest. I just can't believe some of the stuff I'm hearing. But Longy's right. The age that Roy is does not defend him against the accusations that are being thrown his way. The way in which some fans are referring to him is disgusting and intolerable, but that it shouldn't shy away from the fact that Roy is, and we've been accused of not criticising Roy at times this season, you cannot deny that the decision that Roy made on Saturday was the wrong one and is going to impact us for the rest of this season. And yeah, I would be surprised if he's on the dugout on Monday, but you know, the longer it goes on, and to be honest, I've kind of made peace with myself. If we don't hear that he's gone tonight, I think he will be the manager. If we don't hear by the end of Monday or Tuesday night as it is, I don't think we'll hear anything on Wednesday, Thursday or Friday. Because they'll be into planning for that game.
Yeah. Which is mad.
Sorry, I've gone on too long there as well. But
no, it's yeah. Well, listen, this was always intended to be a big event than even the Arsenal one that was dragged on a little bit. But you know, and naturally it's not the first time when pulled up on it in the press conference. Yeah, it was quite sad him having to kind of, someone saying, well, what do you think? They sang this about you. What do you think about that? I really don't like that bit of a manager's last time, particularly someone who's served this world before. But in those moments, he can get very defensive, very grouchy, as he has been probably all season. And the medical team get sort of thrown under the bus a little bit. Adam Wharton gets... you know, assessing performance.
Poor.
Yeah,
referencing
his mistake for the goal. You think, I know what you're trying to say, Roy, but come on, take a deep breath here. But look, if that's three of us here saying, Roy, you've lost us there, we're people that were kind of really hoping it would all just, the fitness would return and with everybody and we could work this out and it was amicably or at least better terms than a 4-1 shellacking at Brighton. So there's still, what, half an hour to go in the game? Those fans that already not on Roy are probably reaching a new level of anger that, well, you referenced some of it. There is a goal, those that do stay, are rewarded with a Jean-Philippe Boutetta goal. But full-time, it's boiling point. You know, that's been building up, that's been boiling up since the first minute and then even, you know, weeks before people, the discontent. I'd gone by then, but I've seen the clip of the players approaching the away end, which, you know, I imagine that was under instruction. or they're just very aware. They did it against Arsenal, to be fair. They're aware that, you know, that's not great and we're going to front it up. It wasn't pretty. Anderson, Dean Henderson in particular, getting a lot of the grief. Anderson that sets up the goal, by the way. I'm now at the point of suggesting with the people who are available, does he go in midfield? But Longy, you mentioned some already, like, you know, people not getting on, bit of conflict in the away end. That, what do you think the players are supposed to do in that situation? As well or poorly as they've played, some people are really annoyed with Joachim Andersen sort of giving some back chat to the away end, or like having someone screaming in his face, probably calling him everything under the sun. And he's sort of showing, well, what must, come on, there's only so much I can do. Do you sympathise with him in that situation, or did you want him to kind of just approach with his head down and put a hand up and wriggle away?
I don't think the players could have won whatever they did if they didn't go over. People, well, why are they not clapping us? We've come down here.
Mm.
They do come over. They're just getting volleys of abuse. And how do you expect someone to receive a volley of abuse, like, and not really react in any way and show no emotion to that? I saw the clips, some of them really close up, and I don't think any player did anything wrong. First of all, I saw the tweets because I obviously left early as well. Because I didn't fancy getting locked in. And they were like, oh, Anderson and Henderson are giving it to the Palace fans. They weren't giving it to the Palace fans. Dean Henderson, like I said, he's one of the big scapegoats at the minute. He's come over and he's got his hands up and he's saying sorry and he's banging the badge down. We're sorry. Anderson, unfortunately, he's not been in great form. So people are jumping on that, saying that he doesn't want to be here, etc. I know for a fact he definitely does want to be here. So that's just, they're using that as a stick to beat him with his form, and they're saying that he doesn't care. He's playing like he doesn't care. Professional footballers don't just tuck it in, right? Unless you're Pierre Van Hooijdonk back in the day. They're there. They're professional. They're there to do a job. At the end of the game, they've lost. They've come over, which I think is the right thing to do, and most of them are holding their hands up. They're clapping. But you see in them clips, there's a lot of people there that are fully, their heads are gone and they're just shouting abuse. And I mean, yeah, tell the players that it ain't good enough. That's fine. I was doing the same again at the end of the Arsenal game. I was like, this ain't good enough, lads. But some of the videos you can see, it's, you're fucking shit. Excuse the language. Mm. You're effing shit. And what do you expect someone to do as a human being? Like, I don't think any of the players reacted to that, really. They were holding their hands up. Paddy McCarthy come over to try and defuse the situation. And yeah, I think the players couldn't win, in my opinion. There, if they didn't come over, they would have got abused for not going over, and they went over and felt the abuse. Now, is that good for the players? Does that make the players think, you know what, sod this? They're not emotionally invested as some of Palace players over the years have been, like some of our legends that we love the most. You know that they live and die for the shirt and all that sort of thing. Professional players now are professional and see it as a job. And we've got a group of players now where there's not as many as of the lads who know the Palace way. And I feel like over the last few years since we got promoted, you had your Damos, your Ramages, Jedinak, all them people who were the core of setting standards, the Palace way, understanding what it is to be Palace players and that. And we've drip-fed people into that, Scott Dan, Joe Ledley, over the years. We've always had a core.
Macca.
I'm looking around now and it's Joel Ward.
Yeah.
And the people that understand the Palace way, there's not a lot of them anymore. Mm. So I don't think the way the abuse is going towards the players is going to go well. Whereas back in the day, players would have stood up, punching. They would have took that on the shoulders, go, look, lads, this ain't good enough. We need to do this for these boys. Now I think it could go the other way and the players are just like, well, we're not really bothered. Like, we're here, we're going to do our jobs professionally because that's what we are, professional footballers. But there's not the added emotion as the older guard we used to have. So I'm seeing things today about Chelsea game and it's worrying signs. It's like, let's start. We want Hodgson out from the first minute. Well, how's that going to go down as a player when you turn up and the fans are on you straight away? Like, I understand fans being upset. I'm upset. This is the most upset I've been and felt unattached from the club probably ever. But I'm going to go there. I'm going to support them players because I want us to win ultimately next week. I'm not going to go there and start caning people straight away and calling Roy out. I do want Roy out now. We've all established we're pretty much in the same boat there. But I'm not going to start singing for his name to get out. At the end of the game next Monday, if things have gone bad again, then people can show and be upset and say it then. But when I'm reading things today, like, oh, we're first from the first minute, we're going to be singing this. I don't know what these people think they're going to achieve. Like, we're meant to be supporters, you know? We're meant to support the club, support the players, support the team, support whoever is the manager. Even though we don't really want him there, but we have to support it because ultimately we want Crystal Palace to do well and win and stay in this league because that's key. But this the crap that I'm reading is just... I don't know, mate. But yeah, I don't know. I'll keep going on here. But the players couldn't win, mate. Coming over at the end, the players could win either way.
Yeah, you're talking my language, though. Yeah, just the heads go in and... It probably is therapeutic in the moment, makes, you know, it's cathartic or whatever, but just could do so much damage. And I'd not actually considered that point you'd made there before. You mentioned Maka in that list there, Jack. You know, MacArthur and Luca both go in last summer.
And Wilf.
It's moments like that where, you know, from the outside looking in, we can't really observe just how much of an influence they had in that dressing room. And if we're really unfortunate, we may yet see that in the next couple of weeks, if not the remainder of the season. Because yeah, it's Ward, maybe Tompkins, but you know, himself has been a target of some grief in his more recent appearances for Palace. Just horrid. And Jack, before we get into listener questions, so this is bad. It's a bad day. It's a really, really bad day. But you got to look ahead. So Elise, we now know, is out for 2 months, reportedly. Ebbs doesn't sound especially positive. Roy mentioned he didn't even specify a timeline for Ebbs. So you're looking at weeks rather than days on that one. Chelsea game certainly doesn't look good for him. Gay is hoped to be weeks rather than months. That's as ambiguous as it has been. And then there was compounded with Jezrak Sakyi, who God knows will be needing this remainder of the season. His comeback game. Yeah, exactly. His comeback game for the under-21s ends very early. He's injured and hobbles off with what is said to be actually quite a substantial recurrence of his injury, or just an injury that will keep him out for the foreseeable, as in he's not going to be involved much at all. Just how much trouble are we in, Jack?
Can I just comment on the last point about the fans? Because I was still in there, and I purposefully booked my ticket side on to be away. I was in that melee after the Brighton game last year, and I found it incredibly toxic and incredibly depressing. So I purposefully actually booked myself further to the right as you look at the pitch, or to the left if you look at the away end. But all that did was give me the vantage point of what I consider to be one of the most dystopian dynamics between a football player and a fan base that I've seen live. Firstly, I don't know how the stewards have allowed the players to get advertised hoarding level. I thought that was incredibly risky from a security perspective. But the volume of the anger directed at two individuals. I can only echo what Longy said in terms of what good is that doing. What good is that doing? And it could have been a lot worse. I was surprised that the Palace players and the coaching staff that got around them didn't act quicker to pull Henderson and Anderson away, because I really thought we were going to see a headbutt from someone, whether it was a player to a fan or a fan to a player. It looked horrendous. And the only saving grace is that didn't occur, really, and that no incident really occurred other than just the obvious animosity between players and fans. But just signals kind of where that element of the fan base is. Going back on Longy's point previously, there is a very loud element of the fan base right now, amplified by social media. And I think it's giving and influencing elements of the away ends in particular. We saw it at the Arsenal. We saw it on Saturday. I don't think it represents the whole fan base. That's one thing I would say. I don't think the fan base generally is as angry at particular players as that particular incident would indicate. And speaking through with several fans since the game, it's almost reassuring, because when you see that, even though you're a Palace fan, I'm watching it with my own eyes in the away end, starting to think, am I this livid? Am I as cross as they are? But should I be as cross as they are? But actually, there's a lot of Palace fans who would not act in that way and be as vociferous with their anger as they were. But just wanted to add that point, because I feel like Palace fans who may feel that they should need to be more angry than they actually are with particular players, maybe not. Maybe it is appropriate to still remain supportive of the team that we support, because they're going to bloody need it, which leads into your point, Joe. We're in a lot of trouble. We're banging trouble. There is a host of fixtures coming up between now and mid-March that I think we were probably all looking at, with Ebbs and with Elise fit. We'll go into those games, we'll pick up some wins. Without those games, well, now is your time, Matthijs Frantzer. That's all I can say, because there is such little threat in that final third. I just don't know where the wins come from. We might grind out some points, but then you've just lost your best centre-half. You're without Cech Decore, who was not adequately replaced in the transfer window. We are bang in trouble. And you know, Chelsea is one thing. Everton away, Burnley at home, successive weekends, 2 6-pointers as far as I'm concerned. And I can't believe I'm saying it. With all the hyperbole before Christmas about we're in a relegation battle, when we lost at home to Bournemouth, people going, oh, we're in a scrap, I couldn't see it. I genuinely couldn't see it. I thought, no, we'll be okay. Players will come back. The transfer window's to come. Well, those players have come back, but they've gone again. And the transfer window's come, it's gone, and we didn't replace or add to the squad where we needed to. So, yeah, I am worried. I do think we'll have enough to stay up. I think we will grind results out. But that's provided Selhurst becomes the fortress that it needs to become. And we cannot have the manager out from whistle one. I don't know what purpose that serves. And if you want to do that, don't come. Don't come. What a waste of your time that would be. No, don't come. I think Monday's going to be toxic enough.
Mm.
We don't need to be doing that from the first whistle, in all seriousness. And I think we're just going to become a circus with the national media and with fans from other clubs if we start doing that from the first whistle. So if that starts happening, I'm not interested. And I'll be there to support the team on Monday night for sure.
Yeah. That part could go on forever. I'm going to move us on to part two and listen to questions, because there have been a lot, as you can imagine. And some of the points that you've been bringing up between you, I want to kind of follow up on. They relate to some of the questions, so I'll try and merge them all here in part two. So join us after this quick break.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the 5-Year Plan podcast, sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Listener and listeners, I'm going to go through your questions, and I've actually gone through them all. I once again apologise for those that have been frustrated. Whenever I host and I source the questions, I didn't know to check for Instagram and Facebook. So I've done that this time. What I have done, however, is merge a few of your questions together, because many of you have circled around the similar themes. So if I haven't got your question on here, my apologies, but it may be very similar to something that someone else has asked. And I'll do that actually to follow up from some of the stuff discussed at the very end of part one. So Longy, Hodelman on Instagram, I think that's how it's said, the username, on the idea of like Jack saying Frantzer, for example. We ask the same questions every week, propose same answers every week, wonder why nothing changes every week. Will now be the time we get the action and reaction we all cry out for? And similar to that, our human in space on Twitter says, what has to happen for Ozo or Frantzer to get a Premier League start? We seem more than ever now, Longy, to require them, because, you know, risk-averse Palace is still letting in loads of goals, but we need a goal for it, and we don't. Brighton, even despite scoring we don't look like we have a great outfit creatively at the moment, certainly without Elise and Ebbs. But yet, how confident are you, especially if Roy is in charge against Chelsea, that we are going to see something that isn't just Schlupp and IU and then Will Hughes furthest forward? Are we just... we all seem to understand now that we've got to at least give it a go, but are you confident in that actually happening by Monday?
I'm afraid I'm not, mate, unless the manager's changed. It's really is. It's that simple. It's been talked about on this podcast, on the post-match pods, about Roy having his... the way, it's just the way he is. The trust issues he has with players, what he sees in training, what he doesn't see. And if he's still the manager on Monday, it will be Jeffrey Schlupp on the left, Ayew on the right, Will Hughes in the 10, and then Lerma and maybe Adam Wharton next to him. And that's just the way it is. Richards will slot in at centre-half, Mitchell on the left, Munoz on the right, Mateta up front, and the goalie is... he'll probably still handle it. If Roy Hodgson's the manager, that's the team. Right. That is... Pochettino ain't got to do any research on that. That's going to be the team. And it's sad that that's the way it is, but it is the way it is. So unless the manager changes, he's not going to start Ozo and Franca, who I think should be thrown in for a start now. Let's change it. Let's try something different. Let's excite the fans, give the fans something to get their teeth into and go, well, you know what? This we can get behind this. But when it's constantly the same thing, that's part of the problem of what's sucking the life out of the atmosphere. I mean, the atmosphere, the Sheffield United game at Selhurst was... I cannot remember how dead it was. Like, I can't remember the last time it was like that. In the Prem era, probably never. And even though we won the game, I walked away not really feeling like we'd won the game. It was so weird. So little things like that, getting them boys in from the start, will definitely be boosts to the fan base. But I just can't see Roy doing it. I really can't.
It's such an odd kind of, you know, a manager wants to go out on their shield, I guess. You know, if I'm going to lose my job, I want to do it on my own terms. But I think not a perfect manager, by the way, I think to Neil Warnock's... I keep going back to Neil Warnock's time coming, their first spell at Palace, where...
He's taken, mate.
Now of Aberdeen, sadly. But,
are you with me? Are you with me?
Are you with me?
Junior 8th, Bow Lane.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember when he fought, he claimed that the first time at Palace was going to be his last job in football, at least thought he was in his head. He had a way more laid-back attitude. His thing for it was, oh, look, we need some pace in this team. Gary Issert. Who are the exciting players in the academy? Go on, let's go for it. I know the Championship isn't the Premier League, and I know that points are at a premium, but we're not having a good time anyway, are we, Jack? So it's like, it can't get worse. So why are we set? You know, what's the definition of madness and sanity? Doing the same thing again and again. What would it take? Do you think would it take a Will Hughes injury for Franca to get in the team? Is that what we're looking at?
Probably. I don't know if this is even viable, but is it now at the point where the ownership directs the sporting director to be a little bit more involved in team selection, even if Roy is still the manager on Saturday? Clearly, Dougie backs Matthijs Franca. He sanctioned a signing of him for $20 million. If that's the case, you would maybe think there's more of a chance, but Harris has been very respectful of Roy previously. Roy... you know, for all the faults that we've talked about in the first part, has a back catalogue of 47 years of high-level management to throw back on. I think if the ownership starts to interfere in team selection, it presents its own problems and you probably find yourself in an even worse situation.
Yeah.
That said, I think you have to play Franca on Monday night. He's the only player that showed anything in terms of going forward on Saturday. The chances that Jeffrey Sutton, I think you touched on it, Joe, in the first part, Jeffrey Schlupp had two moments in the first half, I think they both were, where the ball ricocheted to him after, I think, Brighton losing possession. And he hit both of them relatively straight at Verbruggen, which was frustrating. But those were the only chances really created. When Franca came on and played centrally, I think previously we've seen him have to come in off the left or off the right. Actually, I saw the most impressive display from him that I've seen. And part of that is he's more settled. He's been here 6 months rather than 2 months when he... first maybe started getting minutes. I think he's the only player in that squad that could. I'll use a Selzy. I'll look at the Selzy bingo card. Can I just actually say the abuse that has gone in Selzy's direction over the last few days is
outrageous.
Disgraceful.
Mad. Absolutely mad.
Outrageous.
But anyway, we'll gloss over that one. But in terms of Selzy bingo, France at least could beat a man and get past a man. Jeffrey Sopp ain't going to do that. Jordan Ayew looks knackered after AFCON. He looks spent. And Odson Edwards, even when playing with form and confidence, is fairly pedestrian. So even if you look at playing Edward off the left, which I think is something that might possibly be used, he doesn't beat a player. He's clever with the ball and will get past the player, but he doesn't beat a defender with a trick or with you know, just general speed. So I think, look, I think if he even gets to Monday, surely Monday is last chance saloon. If we get thumped at home, then I don't know what it's going to take for him to sign his own resignation letter, but if we get thumped at home, it becomes, what's the 10th degree of untenable? I don't know. What's beyond where we are?
It's been like that for a while, isn't it?
He's doing it because, and I think it's testament to the bloke. I think he's pretty stoic. Yeah. He said to Steve Parish in the summer, I'll come in and see this season through to you. So as far as he's concerned, he'll get through this season by hook or by crook and keep us safe. And that's his job done. And to be honest, we all deep down know that was probably the brief that was given to him at the start of the season. Keep us up, and then we'll see where we are in summer 24. But, yeah, I think France... Ozo, I'm less certain about. I think it's probably more likely we'll see Jefferson Lerma drop deeper and deeper and deeper until he's a third centre-half, to be honest. So we'll see. But, you know, Wharton, relatively speaking, is an expensive signing. So I know we all hope there's the facility for us to bed him in and given time, well, truth be told, I think Adam Wharton's going to see a lot of Premier League minutes between now and the end of the season.
Yeah. So on France and Selzy, the name brought up for me, the post-match pod, he does mention that I think Dougie Freeman offered Roy Hodgson the opportunity to loan him out, if that made more sense. And Hodgson said no. And maybe that's, you know, it's frustrating when you think, wow, go and use him. But if he's saying no because of depth reasons, that brings on to a question here from Tony.
Just on that, but Joe, just on that,
yeah.
If you took away the Michael Olise injury and he chucked on France at half time and France had as good a second half as he probably did, we're probably all missing it because we're so glum. But if we'd actually said, okay, that's actually a positive, Roy has probably put his most trust in France since he's joined the club. But it's all shrouded by the ridiculous decision to bring Michael Olise on and hamper ourselves for the rest of the season. Sorry,
yeah.
Go on.
That's right. Yeah. I guess the where I'm leading to here with this question from Tony W on Twitter, who's said sort of nice of the board to bring in an attacker, wasn't it? It's not, you know, this doesn't all rest with one person. I think Roy is showing his contribution to how we've got here now. But given that France, all right, if Roy says don't let out France because I haven't got enough wide players, Crystal Palace have two loan spots available. Do not use either of them. And again, Wharton has come in and we'll get to his performance and what people thought and what his prospects lie for the rest of the season. Not a direct Decore replacement, which was said to be the priority before the window even opened by Steve Parish. Did we somehow, as the highest spenders in January in the Premier League, still completely bungle that window?
Go on, Longy.
Yeah, I think this is where Steve Parish would do a lot of good by coming out and not necessarily going on Twitter, but doing something through the club channels, just coming out and just not, don't have to explain himself. I mean, but just saying, look, this is what the situation is. This is where we are. This is why we went down the route of appointing Roy Hodgson for this one season. I think we're all quite clear that it was the brief, keep us up. We're going to take a bit of a gamble this season. We've had a look at the league. Doesn't look as strong as it usually is. We want to save the bulk of our money for next summer when we start the next project, when it's like Vieira when he first came in and we made all them signings. That's clearly what the plan is, right? Starting the new stand. That's meant to be starting in the summer. So Steve could come out now, come out of all this chaos and just say, look, look, guys, this is what's going on. This is why we didn't do the loan signings. Because there's got to be reasons why we didn't make a couple of loan signings or even one. There has to be a reason. And if he comes out and explains them things, it might settle a few people down and think, all right, fair enough. But and then we can then play our part as fans and get behind the team and try and drive us over the line and get the 5 wins we need to stay in the league. But yeah, like it's unfathomable. I can't even speak that we didn't use the 2 loans. I said on deadline day, it's mental if we don't use any of these loan signings, because I was convinced we would do at least one. And we didn't do either. So, yeah, we kind of need someone to come out and say, well, why do we do it? There's got to be reasons. And there's players there. There is players available that we could have got in on loan, I'm sure. I'm 100% sure there was. So, yeah, I just feel like Steve could answer quite a few critics by coming out and just explaining a few little things, you know, and trying to get a few people back on side. Because there's people that are dead against the man. And then there's a lot of us that are with him still. And then the people in the middle can get swayed either way. He could quite easily get them onto his side rather than the pro-text a lot or whatever they want to be known as. But yeah, Steve could really come out with a bit of credit here and sort of explain what's canon and why we didn't do certain things. He has done it in the past. I'm sure he's done that in the past.
Yeah, he's fronted up before. It's an odd situation, which speaks to the wider boardroom kind of tension that there is at the moment.
I think your point is right, though, Joe. I think Wharton was that signing was expedited because there was concerns that we wouldn't get him in the summer. And Daniel Munoz was a relatively cheap buy, if you think of it that way. Has addressed a gap in the squad, although I think he's going to take some time to kind of get running. He got beaten for fun in that first half, got beaten for the goal. The right back score, Hinchelwood scored, and got beaten fairly comfortably for the corner that led to the first goal. So, he's going to take time to settle. He's been playing in the Belgian league, which is several levels below where we're asking him to play straight away. But at the start of that window, and was it the Bournemouth game when quotes were coming out from Steve Parrish in regard to the Decore injury?
Yeah.
It was the start of December. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think we've dodged a bullet by not spending £8 million on bringing in a Calvin Phillips and reminding him how to play football. But there's got to be players out there in Europe that would have been able to come in and do a job. And I'm stunned we didn't do that. We've ended the transfer window as top spenders in the Premier League, but given the injuries that we've suffered, I'd say we're probably a worse squad right now than we were at the start of January, which seems bonkers given that we ended the transfer window as top spenders. But yeah, the squad's light, and it's even someone like Malcolm Abue, who throw to Selzy again on this one, who said that he's seen him play for the under-23s in the Papa John's this season, and he doesn't look to be at the level. But given that he's probably third choice winger right now, well, we've let him go,
yeah,
and we haven't added anything in that part of the squad, and we're so light in parts. It's a joke. Another transfer window goes by, and Tyrick Mitchell remains our only competitive left back. In theory, his kind of deputy, or the perceived deputy, is Ty Adamarola. We've left the club. He's gone on loan as well.
Yeah.
So it's peculiar to end that window as top spenders, but feel a bit unbothered by it all.
Yeah, it's strange. I think we were unlucky. I think we might have got blindsided on the Maxwell Cornet deal, who was on the bench transfer deadline day for West Ham. Benrahma goes to Lyon, and therefore, maybe the plug is pulled on that, but we don't have a contingency or that doesn't happen.
Four nails goes at the same time.
Yeah. But yeah, even so, it's funny. I imagine that you think the Sheffield United game is the 30th of January after the window closes the next day. I imagine, because Maiden Grey asked on Facebook, presuming Roy will go, but why wait until after the transfer window to do it? I think in his heart, maybe not his mind, Steve Parrish and the ownership think, give Roy these players. Ebbs and Elise, fitness will come and it will be fine. And 10 days later, no, 6-7 days later, that's already out the window and you now don't have the plan. You don't have the bailout period to get some extra bodies in. Now you're just stuck with the situation and you know, it's as much of their own making as it is Roy with that crazy Elise situation.
I do think, and I wonder if both of you feel similar to this, but I think in the glitz and the glamour of Ebbs and Elise, Cheick Doucouré does get lost.
Yeah.
The importance of that guy's role. I mean, he was our player of the season last year. And I just feel like he goes down at Luton in a very unfortunate injury. He's out for the season. We know from the moment he goes down, right, he's done for the rest of the season. How have we not replaced our player of the season from last year? How have we not done anything to add to that? Okay, in the interim during December, when there's a ton of games anyway, so it's unfortunate the timing of the injury because we play, I think December's our biggest game period.
Yeah.
So, okay, you get through it. Chris Richards does a job in there. I don't know whether that kind of assured the club, oh, maybe Chris Richards could do a job in there. The guy can't pass the ball particularly effectively. He's done a job, don't get me wrong. I think he's done a decent job in there. Nowhere near the levels of Cheick Doucouré. And I'm not saying you're going to get a temporary measure to come in and replicate the exact class and form of one player, but to leave that gap in the squad unaddressed, it's really underwhelming. It's concerning.
The Chris Richards thing, I'll brush it quickly. I like him as a tackler, a destroyer, when it comes to the defensive instincts. When he's playing in the holding role, in that Doucouré position, and we're playing a team that is not letting us just kind of dictate play, he really, he wants to only be, I think he only wants to be defending. And when we're playing a Man City or someone like that, it's fine, we can do that. When we're playing a team that's going to require us to kind of zip it around a little bit, the onus is on us to do something. Brighton are better than us, but I include them in that. The Bournemouth game is another. He, you know, getting overrun. In the way that Water got overrun for the third goal, Chris Richards, that happened to him a lot in that anyway. I was actually not, when Mark Gay goes off, I'm always going, okay, it's all right. It's actually good for Chris Richards that he's going to move back from there now. We might try and regain some control of the midfield, which didn't quite work out. But I'm just looking at some other questions, fire through quickly. Rob Cormack on Insta asked, what do we think of the new signings? And Chris Wright on Facebook says, what are they thinking after that performance? Munoz, Jack touched on Tariq Lamptey on the left-hand side for some reason. Not even a left back. I think he's playing a sort of further up the pitch. A fast player in his pomp anyway, has had some injury problems, but does give him a busy, busy afternoon, baptism of fire and all that. But coming out of that game, him and Water, what do they know what they signed up for? How is that for a kind of arena? It didn't quite go to plan. We were kind of hoping they would come in and raise the level and meet the, you know, be part of this great story where we pull a win at the Amex, but it didn't work out like that. But do you retain some kind of hope and encouragement for what they bring the rest of the season?
Oh, 100%, mate. I think both of them were absolutely, they will prove to be great signings for the club. The Munoz thing was someone we've looked at. We've done our due diligence. We got him for the price we wanted. He ticked every single box. He fits the profile of what we were after. Now, I'm a right back. And when you're up against someone who is absolutely rapid, it's one of them ones. You get too tight, he does you. You give him a few yards, like he was doing on the weekend. Lamptey is rapid, but he's also got the acceleration, which was doing him every time. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make him a bad player. That just shows you that Lamptey's rapid.
Yeah.
And on his first game in the Prem, everyone was like, I mean, it was one of them days. The day was a terrible day and everyone's going to pick up on every single negative of every single player. But there was also a lot of good things that he did. He got his yellow card, which I knew he would anyway. I was happy with that.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, just get him. Put yourself about a bit because that's what we want from you as well. So he done that, but his passing stats were really good. There was lots of other good things that, because of how crap Saturday was, no one would have picked up on him. They would have just beat him with a stick or get him beaten a couple of times by Lamptey. Wharton, the third goal, the guy's coming on the blind side. Now, I think it's quite harsh to blame him for that. Oh, he got caught on the ball. But when you're playing football, you haven't got eyes in the back of your head. You need your teammate to tell you, like, man on. I don't think he got man on shout there. So I'm not subscribing to it was Wharton's fault as much and he got caught down in on the ball. I've watched, obviously I left, so I've had to watch some highlights back. And he, I thought, overall, a 19-year-old boy coming in and on his Premier League debut against Brighton for us, in the whole shit show of the whole game, I thought there was plenty of positives there from him as well. And the fact that Jack said earlier, he's probably going to get a lot more minutes now. I think that's, if we can survive this year, it could be the making of him. Like, literally thrown in at the deep end. Technically, he's excellent. And the speed of the game, he's got that. He's got that in the locker, not a problem. And getting called out a little bit by Roy on the third goal, I thought was well harsh. Because, like I say, the guy's come on his blind side and nicked the ball off him. And then, obviously, they've scored from it. But, yeah, both players, great sign-ins. The problem is, we didn't do everything else that we needed to do, which, again, is like, well, why did we do that? Just like when we spent all that money on Henderson and everyone was caning us because we didn't do the other stuff.
Yeah.
The other stuff, not doing that, is then saying, well, why did we do this? We could have got... We didn't really need to do that. But both of them... I mean, Wharton, if we didn't sign him in January, he would have gone somewhere else, probably bigger club than us in the summer. We had to do that now. And I think we got a good price for that one as well. Pretty much got the deal we wanted in the end as well. So yeah, I'm really happy with both of them. Yeah, there was a couple of things on Saturday which weren't great, but there was a lot more positives as well. So
they very much weren't alone, were they? Like, let's be honest. You mentioned Henderson there. I'm gonna have to bring it in. One question, Jack, from Violent Bob 4. It's general. There's a few like this. Violet Bob asks what Johnston has to do to get back in the starting lineup. Mentions 11 goals in 3 games conceded by a Dean Henderson. What have you seen Dean Henderson do wrong that you think justifies these kind of calls? Is it just be in goal for Crystal Palace or not be Sam Johnston?
Really funny, isn't it? The Sam Johnston thing is a lot of love for Sam. His first 10 games were those 10 games. End of last season. So naturally, we're going to have a lot of affinity with him because he was in goal during a great time. He got his song very quickly. Very good goalkeeper. When he got injured, I think was tied for the most clean sheets. But there were elements of his play which I was like, I don't know if he's the second coming. I don't think he's... There were elements of his performance where I was a bit like, oh, okay. Like, I think he's benefiting from having two very good centre-halves in front of him. But naturally, those two centre-halves are benefiting from having a very good goalkeeper. But I felt the three of them were just on top of their game so much that it was all kind of, yeah, in a good way for Sam. He gets injured and is replaced by a guy who's very, very highly rated. I've seen nothing from Henderson in terms of the goals he's conceded that has made me think he shouldn't be in the team. I don't think his distribution has been great at points. I think there's been instances where his distribution could be better. In terms of Saturday specifically, a bit like the corner, or was it the second goal that Arsenal scored where he's kind of stuck on his line?
Yeah.
I thought he could have been a little bit more influential in that ball that comes in that, and I will say his name, Lewis Dunk, who does nod it in. I felt that he was a little bit too static, but I'm sure those that know goalkeeping better than I do, actually, he could be doing a bit more. But it's a very good delivery. I actually thought our organisation from that set piece was piss poor. Mm. I thought the fact that Dunk, who I think it was Anderson who he beats in the air, they're the last two last two players in the box. We get front-loaded. The runs completely distract our defence and they're left one-on-one. There's no one to even influence that one-on-one duel. And I think from a defensive set piece perspective, that's really disappointing for it to happen. The first set piece of the game, for it to happen 3 minutes in is really disappointing. So maybe I'm being a bit harsh on Henderson, that I just want anyone to influence that one-on-one duel.
Yeah.
Dunk is a threat in the air. We should have been on top of that far better than we were. The other goals, I think he gets grief for the second one because he doesn't dive. I think it's a very good header into the edge of the goal.
Yeah. Well, you got to head it back where it comes from. That's always what you instructed, yeah.
Again, I mean, I would, again, not dismissing the point that Longy's made in terms of Munoz's positives from Saturday, but there were elements of his performance where he was getting burnt by Lamptey too easy, and that second goal is exactly that demonstrated. Cross comes in, good header, Henderson dives, maybe people don't give him as much grief. Third goal, no chance. Fourth goal, no chance. So, no, don't really think there's too much to blame Dean Henderson for in terms of Saturday. But as we find with lots of players, player becomes better the longer they don't play. Don't know. Was that Sam Johnson's brother yesterday who threw a grenade into Palace social media? Was that his brother or the relation of some form? But
a Johnston anyway, who suggested that. So I think the consensus generally has been, for those that are trying to work out how this is all put together, beyond the idea that Henderson was available at a great price.
Hmm.
There was this idea that Sam Johnston was unhappy. He said that in a Guardian interview when he had a nice write-up when he got in the England team again and played. The idea was that actually he was unhappy when Guaita was here, thought he'd get more of an opportunity, was kind of thinking about life after Palace again, homesick maybe. Then he gets his opportunity, falls in love with the club, his words. And then people suggesting that, does that then just complicate the fact that Palace have thought about life after Johnston, assuming he's going to go and Vinny might go too. And then he's stayed and we've also now end up with two wicked goalkeepers. This supposed brother of Sam Johnston goes online and says it's not true that he was looking to go at any point. And that has just sort of ignited the confusion.
He leaves his post with a line, something along the lines of, there's more to it.
Yes.
Something like that. And it's all a bit like, whoa, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
the other thing with Johnston, which is probably amplifying his feeling, if there is a feeling, is he's probably seeing the guy who's going to go on the plane to Germany that was his seat until he got injured.
He was England's number two.
He was started an England international this season. I can see why there's frustration from a player. And just one added point to the end of the game, the whole weird fracas, whatever that was at the end of the game, is when every player like left and Lewington and McCarthy left, there was one man left standing there and it was Sam Johnston. I thought, I didn't even see you come along. It was like a ghost appeared of Sam Johnston and he kind of offered an apology. And yeah, it was all a bit bizarre. It's all a bit bizarre, isn't it? It's all just a bit weird at the moment. And I don't really know what to make of any of it. But this is always going to be the issue when you've got two high-calibre goalkeepers. It was always going to lead to fans leaning on one a bit more. I do think the grief that Dean Henderson is having directed at him is unfair. I don't think he's particularly fallible for any of the goals that we've conceded, other than I thought he was poor for the second Arsenal goal in the 5-0. But even the one on Saturday that I'm talking about, that I think he maybe could come and do more, well, there'll be plenty of people who think he does the right thing by staying on the line and being the shot stopper that he probably thinks he was going to be. It's just a header that's directed the bottom corner and couldn't be placed any better.
Yeah, and if so, it is apparently said that Dean Kiely is our set piece coach. Maybe he's there under instruction to not go for it. You know,
right?
So we'll I guess we won't ever know that stuff.
Why do we stop putting people on the post as well on corners?
Disappeared, okay. Hasn't it?
Ah,
yeah.
That first goal, someone was on the post. They just volley it away.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, not many teams at the top teams do anymore, but.
That first goal was so soft.
It looked like everybody was in the 6-yard box. It was really strange.
But all dragged forward.
Yeah.
And Pascal, I think it was Pascal Gross. He's just like, well, I'll hang it back then and leave our best header of the football against their best header of the football and see how we go.
Yeah.
And they scored a goal.
The defensive start, you know, there were a couple of questions on that I won't get into because of time, but we're looking very porous in defence generally now. And that's the bad sign for the risk averse Palace style that we're used to under Roy, you know, what it needs to be in order for it to work. You know, I guess some of that is down to the fact that we've not got a midfield that can hold onto the ball. We've not got a forward line that can hold onto the ball and make something happen at the other end. So it's just coming back at us wave after wave. And eventually, especially if some of them are out of form, like an Anderson, he's not had some great moments. It's going to, and then you throw in a couple new players in there. It's going to be, we're going to have to rely on getting goals rather than holding on to clean sheets. And
that third one, when Anderson just offers the leg.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Not great. I'm going to squeeze in one more question here. Not Russell Levy's question, which is, are we all feeling spoiled today? I think we've answered that. I think we've answered that. Which feeds into the when Roy has not helped himself, even in hamstrung, he has stuff like that has just really got us here where we are today. The question I wanted to ask was from Ricky B on Twitter, who says, is it actually fair on Roy to keep him in place at this point?
I said after the Arsenal game, I felt deeply uncomfortable that I felt a 76-year-old geezer was being flogged. I felt that the longer it went on, we were going to end up with almost the entire fan base thinking he has to go. the derogatory comments in heading his direction. And I think that question bleeds in directly the direction of the decision makers that thought it was appropriate to bring him back and leave him with the squad they've left him. Because even if Ebbs and Elise were fit, I'd still argue we're light. I'd still argue we haven't got the options off the bench and we're relying on two players who were playing championship football 3 and 4 years ago. So,
and we always have injury crisis around November,
We always have injuries. It's a football club. They're playing 38 competitive games of football season. We're going to get injuries. I do feel for Roy, and I still feel for Roy, even though I'm now advocating that I think he has to go. I still feel for Roy. I think he's a decent bloke. I think he's done a lot for this football club. I think he's a good man. I'm not going to shy away from my opinion about Roy Hodgson. Yes, he's been coming increasingly tetchy as this second spell has gone on. I think he feels very frustrated himself. But yeah, I do think he has been left to the wolves. And now he's making decisions that are jeopardising himself, the club, players, because I think he's just got nothing really to fight with anymore. And yeah, for his sake, as much as anything, I don't think he should be our manager anymore. Part of my thought about it is that actually, yeah, Roy, go and have a nice glass of red with Sheila and have a good evening, mate, because you've earned it. You've worked your ass off for 48 years. I know you love the game, but the game's starting to not love you. And it's quite a difficult place to be, really, watching on.
Yeah. I'm going to leave it there. Thank you, listeners, for your questions. There were loads and loads and loads, but it was stuff I hope that we've covered elsewhere on the pod, if not by other questions that were quite similar. But thank you very much.
I have a question for Longy, Joe, if it's all right.
Yeah, go for it.
As an NFL fan and a neutral, what are your feelings about Sunday? Let's talk about a game that we want to talk about.
To be honest, mate, I'm so disappointed with the way the Dolphins ended up.
You've signed the season off.
I was convinced we were making a Super Bowl. And then even the championship games, I wanted the two other teams to win. So I think I'm a 49ers, mate. Kind of the Chiefs winning. Cannot stand the Chiefs.
Fine. That's the answer I wanted. That's the answer. And I know a few other listeners might want that one as well. So
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Here I did go. Spend part of my day today trying to find if there was a Palace link to either sets of players, but there's no Palace link to either the Chiefs or the
Rob Sutherland is a 49ers fan. That'll do.
So am I. So I'll take it.
Oh, yeah.
I'll take it.
Fair play.
I'll probably be smiling. If the Niners get over the line, Chelsea could have scored their fourth in the first 15 minutes. I'll still be there, stood there smiling. So it's okay. I might need. However, if they lose, yeah, I might bring my own bed sheet or something like that with something scribbled on it. I don't know.
You might as well be speaking Swahili as far as I'm concerned, chaps.
I'm gonna nip it in the bud.
Maybe one day, but not right now. I could use a distraction, actually, sporting wise. I'm off to the darts next World Senior Darts next weekend. That's my distraction because it's going to be better than.
More Martin Wolfie Adams than Patrick Mahomes then.
Yes, yeah, that's my speed. there will be one more difficult question for you both, but I'm going to give you till the next part to think about it, because we're going to have to try and find some people for 3-2-1 chats. So have a think on that on the other side of this. Okay, part three of the 5-year plan podcast, and we have to, for the sake of consistency, for the integrity of 3-2-1, we're going to have to reflect on the weekend. I guess you can include the Sheffield United game, can't you? Okay, did that happen in the last pod?
I did that last week.
Oh, so it's just the Brighton game, and I'm not going to do you any favours. I am going to... Oh, no, I'm going to go first. I'm really going to drop you two in it. My person that I'm going to put forward is Jean-Philippe Mateta for getting a goal, a header. We spoke after the Sheffield United game how well he played and actually learning to use his physique properly in a way that it's often been frustrating how often he hasn't done that during his time at Palace. City game was another one like that, actually. It's becoming more and more markedly obvious that he's learning that and applying it properly. And that concurs, you know, you factor in that and that, the continuation of that is applied with the goal. It's an excellent header, actually. Is it his first header?
The Millwall goal was a header?
Millwall goal, yes. Okay. Other than that, I can't think of another one's being a header. Most of them were on the ground, first time, instinctive finishes, which I think is his strength. But it's great to see an aerial threat from him, even though the goal ends up meaning nothing and it's in a meaningless game. It's not another goal at Brighton that he can kick a corner flag and add to his collection.
Imagine if he had the goal.
Yeah.
He's sensational.
Get him out of the club.
Yeah. Well, I think, it would have been, split the fan base. Just to kind of lean on Longy's adage there in terms of the positives of Munoz's performance that are probably lost in light of the nature of the defeat and everything, I think actually the quality of the goal's probably been lost, because to score a header from outside the posts at that speed, when a ball's whipped in like that, that's a hell of a goal. So it's a real shame it's been lost. So, yeah, fair shout, Joe. And he did cause quite an argument between Brighton centre-halves at one point. So that was, small bit of an afternoon joy that I saw when the two Brighton players were having quite the argument because of Jean-Philippe Mateta. Was actually surprised he got taken off.
Is that having Elise Gate happening? Is that where we're going, oh, Christ, who am I to preserve now? I need to do something.
We are at the point where we're wrapping up Jean-Philippe Mateta in cotton wool. It's desperate.
Well, I keep being optimistic about, we're going to play this team who've just been done a bad result. Chelsea's defenders have been sixes and sevens recently. Maybe he's the man to frustrate them a little further, fingers crossed. Longy, I'll throw to you your alternate. Sorry, Jack, I have to check it out.
No, it's fine. I think us of this parish, we have to kind of take the bullet when we have to. So,
it's good. Is there anyone that comes to mind for you?
I think I could pick França, but I would feel like a bit of a fraud because I literally left the ground so early that I didn't really get to appreciate how well he had actually played. So I feel like I can't. Possibly Jack's going to pick França, so I feel like I'll be absolutely stealing that one. And I don't feel like I'm in the boat to do that after leaving the game early. So I am gonna pick. I'm going to pick Adam Wharton. And like I said earlier, I thought he was harshly criticised for the goal, the third goal. I feel like he didn't look like a rabbit in headlights when he came on. And he could have quite easily, because he looks slight.
Yeah.
He definitely looks slight. But he could have easily not stepped up on Saturday. And with everything that was going on around him, the fact that it was our rivals, the way the game was going, and he was literally thrown in. And I thought he did a really decent job, and there was loads to be positive about. So he would be my choice.
Yeah. 20 years old today at the time of recording, by the way. Happy birthday, Adam Wharton. Jack, fair play to Longy. He's thrown a life raft at you there.
Throw me a bone. Just on Adam Wharton, I thought there were a couple of moments that showed why we have invested that money in him. Lovely way to pass a couple of times. Very good in terms of his balance, moving away from players, and made a couple of seasoned Premier League players look very daft at points. Also gave us what I would consider the biggest roar of the afternoon. So we'll comment and commend him for that. I will go for França then, in light of my comments in the first part. I think that's the first time I've picked him this season. I just thought he looked like he's developed physically, but also in confidence. He ghosted past a few players a few times, looked good. His weighted pass was at points a little bit frustrating. He kind of misweighted his pass a few times, which led to a move breaking down. But at least he was showing the intent to make those passes in the right parts of the pitch. But I thought his best play was when he was playing centrally. I thought he looked best there, which is good to see, because in the gap without Eze, we need somebody who could possibly do that. So, yeah, he is who I will give my nomination to. But can I give special mention to my brother, Ben, who I think drank a hospitality bar dry during Saturday afternoon, and also thanked Alan Mullery, as he thought Alan Mullery was the restaurant manager as he left. So I hope Alan Mullery's ego took a bit of a beating at about 6:30 on Saturday evening. But yeah, special mention to my brother for probably the best Palace performance of the afternoon, actually, in terms of impacting their profit margin. But no, Matas França would be my shout. I think he's still paying for it. I spoke to him on Sunday and he didn't sound great. So I'm hopefully he's recovered fully by this point. So if he is listening, he does sometimes listen, even though he tells me he doesn't. Hope you're all right, mate.
Yeah. So now we do the next difficult part, which is distributing these points accordingly. Is there anyone that stands out among those three that you think deserves more than 1 point, or even the full whack, the full set of three?
I've got JP for the three. Like you say, building on recent performances, he's becoming a bit of the go-to guy, and it really was a really good header. It really was. The ball was behind him. He's arched his body, and he's got some power behind it as well. So I think he definitely deserves the three, in my opinion.
I agree, because I think that would put him top, and I want the chaos to continue.
More chaos.
I'm all for it. Nothing sums up this week than Jean-Philippe Mateta going ahead in our Player of the Season competition.
Isn't that the case of where we are then?
I think we need it. I think we all need it. Joe, I'll leave it to you to allocate the other two. I think two promising youngsters showing potential.
Full transparency, I'd gone by the time France had... I'd seen him come on the pitch, actually, because he came on for Michael Olise, but I didn't... I didn't see enough of his work to really know how well he did. So I can only, despite, you know, what happened with the furlough, I'm going to give it to Adam Wharton. I really want this to be a chart. I'm still really excited about him. I still really want it to work. I think it will work. It will just be blooded in a lot more urgently than perhaps we'd all like it to be. But, you know, that Chelsea game, let's be honest, look, the video compilations of Adam Wharton prior to us joining were a really impressive performance at Stamford Bridge for Blackburn in the Cup. So a nice repeat against that same team could do very nicely.
Now he won't get a minute.
No. Fantastic. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Right. Okay. We wrap that up very quickly. And then let's just very, very quickly look ahead to that Chelsea game. Then it's a Monday night at Selhurst. As we mentioned, it's not going to be a great atmosphere. But if you are coming, please do your best to rally behind the team and the players that are available, because they are going to need it, despite Chelsea's form. You've got to look at how our form and where our heads might be at as a squad. They're going to need our backing. So enjoy the weekend off and keep it cheery, and then save it for Monday night. Let it all out. Hungry Runner 82 on our Instagram said, "We can't replace like for like, supposedly. What do you guys think about 4-4-2? It's a Roy classic. We saw a lot of it in the previous spell. Is that something we need to be looking at with the current availability that we've got?" And, I mean, judging by the faces of both of you, neither of you seem particularly keen on it there. But, Jack, I'll ask you first. Is that something that you're, if not expecting, you'd rather see with the players available?
Jeffrey Schlupp left and Jordan Wright. Is that what we're thinking with JP and Edward?
I guess it would be, wouldn't it?
And Will Hughes and Jefferson Lerma in the middle of the park.
Oh, I hope it'd be Lerma and Wharton rather than Hughes, but...
You know, it won't be. Yeah. No, only because, one, that team...
That's rank, actually.
That is freaking me out. But two, it also gives us very little option off the bench.
Right.
And I wonder if he's not deploying Edward at the same point as Mateta, because he feels he needs one of them to come on with 20 minutes to go, because they both might not have it in the tank for various reasons. One is JP's very all out there performances, and Edward still coming back from an injury himself. So I think we'll see 4-3-3, but I actually think we will see Edward and Mateta start, even though what I've just said, I think Mateta will start as the central striker and Edward will come in off the left, somewhere that he was deployed under Vieira previously as well. Not particularly brilliantly. I recall him scoring a couple of goals against Norwich at home from that vantage point, but one was a penalty and the other one was against a very flagging Norwich team. But look, we've got very few options in that team. If I pull up and 7 o'clock and I see that David Ozo or Matthijs Frans is in the starting lineup, I might have a bit of a smile, but I am expecting to see the same faces if the manager remains. We haven't even talked about who an alternative manager to Roy would be, even if they did come in. And I think that sums it up, really, that even us who live and breathe Palace can't really pinpoint a particular person that we think would come in, wouldn't come in. Just one thing that I did pick up on Saturday and where we were, somewhat relevant to Chelsea as well with Graham Potter. I heard from several people, Brighton fans on Saturday, that there's quite an expectation that the next job that Graham Potter takes could quite possibly be the Brighton job come the summer, with the expectation that Roberto De Zerbi will be leaving. So the continuous reference of Graham Potter being, I don't think he's thinking about a job now. I don't think he's going to take any job between now and the end of the season. And whether it's Brighton in the summer or someone else, I think Graham Potter will see what's available in the summer. And I think any attendance of Graham Potter at a Palace match is pure coincidence. I don't think he's at the table. But the fact that there is no clear candidate and that Twitter's scaring itself to death at, you know, old memes of Chris Coleman or Alan Pardew, it just sums it up, to be honest. But sorry, just to go back to the point, if it is Roy Hodgson, I do think he will stick to the players that he trusts, this notional trust that we've talked about so many times this season. It might be a bit of a grim period. The concourse between 7 and 8 on Monday might not be the place to be.
I really just want it not to be. Like, I know that's such a childish reaction. I really just want it to not be that. I really just want it to be Roy goes, all right, even if it's a up yours, here you go.
Yeah.
I'm playing them all. This is, you know, to be fair, Vieira did it at Brighton away before he got sacked. He would never play Edouard, did he? It was a real thing. And then he started him at Brighton and it was a, very much like a last roll of the dice move and it didn't pay off. But I would just like it to be, okay, look, here's something we can get our teeth into, something we can clip, a straw we can clutch to. And Longy, would a win or a good performance, a good result, I'd even accept like a hard fought draw and include it in that. Would that change your feelings on the situation at all, or is it just a stay of execution at this point, do you reckon?
I think it's gone too far down the line. Even if we win, it's ultimately just going to be a stay of execution, and it is game to game, week to week, how the mood is, what happens in the game. Just because it's too far down the line now, it's gone too far. Too many people are on the Roy outside now, and the people that were bang in the middle and trying to give him as long as he can, they've already stepped over that now after what we talked about earlier and the reasons why. So even with a good performance, a win, or even like I say, a draw, I just think it's just, it will be, then we'll move to the next game, which is Everton away, which is going to be mad tough. And it's going to be like that. And until there is a change, it's going to be game by game, see how that game goes, see the fallout of the game. Any comments that he comes out with, people will jump on it. Any performances, people will jump on those. And that's just the way we are at the minute. Literally, it's going to take him going and someone else coming in, which that's the biggest problem. The biggest sticking point here is nobody wants to come in now, looking at the squad we've got, going, I could risk my long-term prospects of getting that job or another job by taking this job, because there's no doubt we're deep in trouble. There's probably one spot, relegation spot, that's going to be up for grabs. I think Sheffield United and Burnley are going to go, but there's one spot. Luton are doing their damnedest to not be involved in that. And then
we're playing them in about a month as well.
Mate, the next run of games, we've got a bang average Chelsea team who we should have beaten at Stamford Bridge, and I'm still annoyed we didn't. We've got them next week. We're Everton away, who are in bad form, but at Goodison, they're always, the crowd seem to get them over the line. Then we've got Tottenham away, which we never get anything. In fact, Burnley at home, which is massive, it is proper, like the ultimate 6-pointer at this very moment in time. Then Tottenham away, which we write it off, we lose, Son will score, standard, we won't score, that's a standard, we can write that one off. But then we've got Luton at home, and then potentially we'll have a 3-week gap, because it looks like Newcastle will be through in the FA Cup. So that Newcastle game is going to get moved. So we're going to have a 3-week gap there. So if Roy doesn't go in the next coming days, I don't think he's going to go until that point. That will be when they look at it again, maybe. Unless something really badly goes wrong, we get battered by Chelsea or we lose to Burnley, etc. But this next one of games...
Longy, what
without,
would that...
Without Ebbs and Elise as well, it's like...
If we go to that point, that would be the anniversary of them sacking Patrick Vieira.
I had this conversation in one of my group chats. I said, I've referenced the 3-week gap. I said, look, we've got 3-week gap. Look, if he doesn't go this week, it'll go then. And they were like, oh, it'd be too late. I said, well, it wasn't too late last year, because it's to the point, it was like, say, it's almost to the year that we did it last year. And there's enough winnable games in that last run to get us over the line. Like I say, I look at the table, I think we need 5 wins between now and the end of the season. 5 wins. And there's games in there where you go Luton and Burnley at home, they're the ones you bank your money on.
The Leicester equivalent game. Even a 1-0. I was trying to mark out the equivalent fixtures. The Leicester equivalent game is Forest away.
Forest away, exactly. After that 3-week gap.
Yeah.
And then we got Bournemouth away on the Tuesday night.
Which I've just booked a hotel. Like, the bug is, like, you cannot escape this.
Yeah.
Despite everything, I've just booked a hotel Bournemouth away. Like, you cannot help yourself.
Exactly, mate.
Is that a relatively local one for you as well, Loggy?
Yes, just literally down the road, mate. I'm on the process of booking a hotel as well. I'm treating the wife to Bournemouth away, so we have a little bit of time back.
Beautiful.
Romances are dead. Yes.
She knew what she signed up for, lad, when she married me.
It's but the Chelsea one, Belongi is exactly right. I mean, we're talking 48 hours after they got pumped at home by a decent Wolves team. You know, when you're at the point where you're looking at Gary O'Neill being like, oh man.
The connect that he's got with the fans, mate. The pump, the fist pumps, and it's like, oh, what, crying out for something like that?
Yeah.
He's a local to us. He's a local to Palace as well.
Beckenham boy, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Chelsea fans are... Yeah, they're in all sorts of despair themselves, but they've only got themselves to blame for the way their club's been run and all that. But the fear with them, they've got so many, in theory, theoretically good players that it could just click and they roll us over and it's done very quickly. But the longer that game goes on, it's not even without Ebs and Elise, there's still a game to be had there because they're so bang out of form. But yeah, let's wait until... Never do I think during my time supporting Palace have I been... so impacted by the team lineup as I am at the moment. And yeah, Saturday hurt. We've seen that without Ebs and Elise on the bench, that hurt. So I'm hopeful there'll be some recovery to morale on Monday night.
Yeah. And Monday night will be the third Palace Chelsea game within the club in a matter of days as well. Cause the ladies playing them in the FA Cup on the Sunday. And then Thursday, I do need to mention, it's the under-18s FA Cup game against Chelsea at Selhurst.
Yeah.
Tickets from £1.
Tickets from £1. Quinny's been on. Quinny, I know through playing for us with the Remp team.
Yeah.
He said he's open to see as many Palace fans down there as possible just to cheer on the boys. A lot of things going wrong with the club at the minute and we're all in a bit of disarray, but we can certainly look at the academy teams and certainly Quinny's under-18 team. There's some really exciting players there. So if anyone is available to get down there Thursday and within the madness of the first team environment, focus on some good things at the minute. Bill Shacks reckons that we've got, if we win, we've got Millwall away in the next round, which would be quite interesting.
Get team into that, Palace fans. Come on.
Tasty.
Yeah. But yeah, get yourself down to Selhurst on Thursday, listeners, if you can, and support the young lads. And like I say, it's a bit crap first team wise at the minute, but that's certainly something we can all get behind and give a show of support, I think.
And the women. And the women. It's,
and the women, if you can get down there.
They're having a really good season.
Yeah, it's a tough task taking on Chelsea women. But I mean, what an experience for them. I mean, they've sort of pretty much gone full time now, the ladies team. So, and they're always they're full time at the academy and stuff. So, this season's been really, really good for them and their development. And getting to play against a Chelsea team, which is going to be full of lionesses, is going to be a great experience. Again, I know they get good support anyway, but yeah, if anyone's free on Sunday, get yourselves down. I think Kingstonian they play, Chelsea team. So, yeah, and then set yourself up for the big one on Monday night.
Yeah. And that's a nice note to finish on. I mean, we could dwell on the doom and the impending doom of that of the Monday night, but just a real reminder of what we're really in this for, what we can contribute positively, and you know what we're all hoping to see from our club in its various guises and various teams moving forward. What we the Palace we want to believe in, we can still push towards that at Selhurst Park. At Kingstonian's ground for that women's game. I feel that that's the nicest way to end this, I feel like, because, you know, I've found myself being very easy into a spiral over the last few weeks on here, and
on my social media reflects that too. I'm getting very impressionable. I'm firing off on news media reports. I'm losing my rag, and I just know Monday night they're going to get my full backing, and I hope the same goes for you guys and the listeners as well. So we'll wrap it up there. A bumper 5-year plan once again. Always get your money's worth of me. I used to apologise for it, but maybe I only apologise for you guys for sitting in for this long. So thank you and sorry, Jack Pierce. I'll speak to you again soon. And Longy, thank you again for coming on. Delighted that we could speak to you again. And hopefully the next time I see you, it would be after some very positive Palace news to smile about.
Yeah, nice one, mate. Like I say, I don't mind coming on any time. Like I say, it's cathartic to talk about it. But all I'll reiterate to anyone who's listening, let's get behind the boys and start the game. If it doesn't go right, then we can have a moan up at the end. But start the game, let's get behind them and do what we do best. We're Palace fans. We don't expect to beat everyone every week. We know what we are. So, and what we do best is we support our team. So, yeah, everyone out there who's listening, please just stick with the team. No matter if you don't want the manager, if you don't want the owners, let's support the team. Let's do our bit. Let's make Sellers loud and let's try and get us over the line.
Yeah, too right. You think Chelsea, the sword of Damocles is hanging over Pochettino as well. You know, they're a team that are, you know, nervous whether or not they should be with the players they've got. We've got to be the 12th man and get it over the line. So hopefully when we rejoin you next week, or the post-match pod in between as well for the patrons, something like that has materialised. And if not, we've got a lot to talk about either way. So thanks very much and we'll see you later.
Podcast Network.